You can see from this film how the key to their creative solution was first achieving mutual understanding. You'll also notice the serendipitous benefit, that is, the unexpected consequence that came from this creativity. Serendipity sometimes means happy accident. Something happened that no one initially anticipated. It emerged from trust and relationship. The street hawkers essentially became the security force for the store. Street people know who the thieves are, and the thieves know this. Because pilferage of inventory is a major problem in South Africa, this became a huge benefit. You literally see the building of trust and communication. Trust is then turned into a verb by entrusting a group of people. And then those people live true to that trust and reciprocate it. This is always bonding. It also creates an immune system that has the power to deal with issues or problems that may come down the pike in the future. Many people ask this question: how important are the life cycles of organizations? And is there a third alternative to their eventual decay and death? My answer is, I suggest that there are basically four what we could call Bermuda triangles which lead to decay, disaster, and death. The first occurs at the idea stage, where a good idea is simply squelched by negative energy, self-doubt, and fear. The second Bermuda Triangle occurs at the production stage, where the great idea is not properly executed. This is where most new organizations fail, perhaps upwards of 90% within 2 years. There is just so much slip between cup and lip, between the great idea and making it happen. The third occurs at the management stage. Production with scalability has been institutionalized so that one can replicate or duplicate the enterprise, such as expanding to another good restaurant. But the producer either tries to do it all, or he or she tries to clone himself or herself. Formal systems are never established to keep things, especially cash flow, in control. The fourth Bermuda Triangle occurs at the change stage, where the organization needs to reinvent itself to adapt to changing market conditions or new opportunities, but gets so bogged down in its own bureaucratic life, rules and regulations, that it can no longer meet and anticipate the needs of targeted customers. Good management teams should have people with qualities that match the needs at all four stages: idea, production, management, and change leadership. Most importantly, the team must have a spirit of mutual respect so that the strengths of each are acknowledged and utilized, and the weaknesses are made irrelevant by the strengths of the others. In other words, you need an entrepreneur, that is the idea person, a producer, a manager, and a team builder leader who helps create the norm of mutual respect, and who creates a complementary team with the power to reinvent itself and take it into new life cycles. Here's another constantly asked question. What do you do when you are involved in merger and acquisition work and trying to bring people together from different companies and different cultures? Is there some magic third alternative button to push to achieve interdependence in a global economy? My response is, the reason why most mergers and acquisitions don't work is that they are forcing the processes. It's like bringing about a merger of different DNAs. Have you ever seen a blended family? How hard is it to see that work successfully? It takes tremendous time, persistence, patience, and Indian talking stick communication toward third alternative solutions. In the meantime, I'll guarantee that you'll see the five metastasizing cancers manifesting themselves. You know, contending, comparing, competing, criticizing, and complaining. Remember, with people and cultures, fast is slow, and slow is fast. With things, this isn't the case. Fast is fast. But with people, efficiency or speed is ineffective. I have learned this personally the hard way, but it has powerfully reinforced what I am sharing with you now. There must be an open, mutual, respectful communication of the value of the different approaches if you are to produce a third alternative culture. This often requires new formal leadership. Once I was working with a big company up in Canada with a very mature, empowered culture. Because leaders in the headquarters of the company in the States were opening up operations in all kinds of other countries, they wanted to establish some central policies. But these policies assumed cultures far less developed and mature than the Canadian one. Canadian management asked me if I could help them maintain their relative independence and empowerment and not get sucked into roles and policies that were geared to immature cultures and the weakest links in the value chain. I was happy to help. Once the American executives came to realize that they were not interdependent with Canada, that they could use Canada as a model of what was possible, that Canada's mature culture was more productive, leaner, and more profitable, with far greater empowerment, less bureaucracy, and less tape, they started pointing to the Canadian operation as a model organization, which the less developed cultures could emulate. The key is, don't artificially force interdependency. It has to come naturally through people getting to know and understand and trust each other. Then they can become creative. Until this happens, people see interdependency as dependency.